Welcome to The Scoop, brought to you by Indeed, your weekly dose of internal talent news from here and around the globe. So grab your popcorn and open your mind as I hand you over to our anchors from Tarpod, Lauren Sharp and Craig Watson.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Scoop. I'm Craig.
And I'm Lauren with a head cold.
Lauren, yes. You sound, and people can't see you, but I can. You don't look the best either.
Oh, God. It's just the whole ear, nose and throat thing, the good old classic head cold. I know I must have been partying with Jesus all weekend on that three-day bender he had on Friday and didn't get up till Sunday.
All right. Why don't you kick us off so we can get you back tucked up in bed where you belong?
Oh, I know. I need someone to bring me soup. Yeah. Maybe this is why I need a boyfriend or I should get married. Someone to bring me soup. Better yet, Uber Eats does that.
Yeah. You don't have to marry him.
Well, anyway, I'm going to start off in New Zealand today.
Perfect.
I am. So a former employee who lost their job over anti-vaccination Facebook posts may have to pay $20,000 to their former employer, according to HRD. Now, I'm going to get this pronunciation totally incorrect. A former Wairarapa District Health Board, now known as the Te Wahutu Ora, I know I've got that wrong.
Our Kiwi friends can correct us.
Yeah, they're coming at me. I can hear it now. May have to pay the $20,000 back after unsuccessfully challenging her suspension and dismissal from the employment court.
Wow.
So it does serve as a cautionary reminder to see what your social media posts relate to your employees and employment and on or your role online can seriously have some implications here. And most people do have a social media policy in their policy handbooks nowadays. So I think you need to be across these people. So this person is a registered palliative care nurse employed by, I won't try and say it again because I know I'm butchering it, in May 2015 until her summary dismissal in April 21. Now, the dismissal occurred after her employer learnt of a series of anti-vax posts that the employee shared on Facebook and offensive and disrespectful posts about Muslim New Zealanders.
Oh.
So on appeal, the employment court upheld the authorities' determination that the suspension and dismissal were justified. They confirmed that social media posts, even if done in the employee's free time and containing her personal opinions, are not automatically protected from possible employment consequences. The posts were in breach of the workplace policies accessible to other employees of said company that I won't butcher again, and ran contrary to its active and open work to support and deliver the government's vaccination program. So, look, this person was a healthcare worker in the middle of COVID going all anti-vax. They lost their bloody job. It was going to happen, mate.
It
goes to show, though, more making it back to the social media side of this, what you post on social media is not just your personal opinion. It can affect your employment. So be careful out there, people.
Be very careful.
Because I know that some employers do go Facebook stalking before they'll put an offer out. So sometimes I do recommend to close your social media to the general public.
Yes, and on a big night, after a big night out, make sure that you're not updating your status.
Because Monday morning when you call in sick, it ain't going to go down well.
Exactly. Hey, I've got one from the Herald Sun, that bastion of credible journalism out there. Retail workers applying for CEO jobs in Job Seeker scam. So Australian job seekers are applying for jobs they are wildly unqualified for just to tick off the FastSkill requirements in a bid to get their welfare payment. Now one recruiter has decided to call out the system. So underqualified Australians are applying for executive jobs and experts are warning that the government system is not working. Graham Wine from Superior People has called for an urgent overhaul of how job seeker payments are handled after receiving hundreds of applications from people for jobs they've got no skills or experience for. It also comes after One Nation Senator Pauline Hanson blasted claims immigration was necessary to fill skill shortages, calling on the Albanese government to do more to ensure Australian job hunters were applying for appropriate jobs. Mr. Wynne said punitive mutual obligation system forces job hunters to apply for a set number of applications per week or forgo their welfare payments is pushing people to apply for jobs they will never get and tying up recruiters across the country. What do you think?
For fuck's sake. It's been happening for decades. Oh, my God. Someone's had a whinge and someone's decided to put it in a bloody newspaper.
Slow Newsweek at the Herald Sun.
Clearly it must be because job seekers have been doing this for decades. I think that their social welfare system has got bigger problems than some recruiter having a fucking whinge.
I think you're right. It is. Look, it is though. I mean, there are people who are on the dole who maybe don't want to work and they do go down that path. But you sort of, as a recruiter, you expect it, right? You build it into your time.
So if someone's just whinging over, hundreds of people applied for my CEO role who are not qualified, well, just send the bulk thanks but no thanks email and move the fuck on, you whinging little shit.
They're asking the government to do their screening
please.
For them.
Please. Price on a bike.
What you got
honestly,
next?
Honestly, there's bigger things in the world to worry about than this. Seriously, whinge like that when I've got a cold just doesn't go well with me. Anyway, 3 in 4 organisations worldwide are struggling to find skilled talent. Again, HRD, my little Bible, really. 3 in 4 employers worldwide are reporting difficulties in filling vacancies according to Manpower. The Manpower Group did its 2024 Global Shortage Report, and it revealed 75% of employers across the world are finding it hard to fill their openings, slightly down on the 77% last year. And to address the issue, 65% of employers around the world said they are offering more work flexibility. Others said they're raising wages. That was 30% said that. And 28% said they're looking at new talent pools. Now, Manpower did survey 40,077 employers across 41 countries to come up with this data. So I would give it a bit of street cred.
Yeah, it's a
now,
lot.
Now, by size, the organisations with 1,000 to 5,000 employees are most likely to find it hard recruiting talent.
Wow,
so
interesting, isn't it?
So it is like the smaller enterprise level.
75% of companies are finding it difficult. Wow.
I always find that coming off the back of, though, I was reading an article about how so many companies over the last few years, especially with COVID and coming out of COVID with their cost cutting, have cut training and educational programs for their current staff. Mm. So, again, they're not upskilling as well to look into that around internal mobility.
Yeah. 1/3 of HR and TA leaders are scared of AI repercussions. So according to new research from global hiring platform Indeed, they have found that roughly 1/3 of HR and TA leaders and job seekers say they're concerned AI will require them to reskill, upskill, or find an entirely new occupation. This is despite the fact that 54% of HR TA leaders say they are hopeful about the potential impact of AI at work. So 1/3 are saying they're scared they're going to be out of a job, but 54% are saying they think that there'll be a potential positive impact at work. So the tension between concern and optimism presents an opportunity for business leaders to help their teams adopt AI responsibly. We'll have the notes to the full article in our show notes. But again, I don't think we can get through one episode without at least touching on AI at the moment, can we?
Well, it's everywhere. And I think that if you're frightened that AI is going to force you to upskill and reskill, well,
upskill and reskill,
you should be constantly upskilling and reskilling.
Yep. Exactly.
My God, what are you doing? Living under a fucking rock? You should be constantly having your own form of education, whether it be around AI to better your work or something that you do on your own. Just, oh, my God. Oh, idiots. I tell you, I'm surrounded by idiots today. Anyway, all right, talent mobility. This was an interesting little article. Now, this one, it was what's the most challenging country for remote workers? Mm. So basically, it's relocating your remote workers. The headline's a bit of a bullshit headline. I'll give it that. A new report has found that the United States is the most challenging location to send assignees to, with immigration emerging as a top challenge in talent mobility. So based on a list that they've created, immigration appears to be the major hurdle in all and most challenging destinations for assignees across the world, whether it be visa wait times, complex processes, right. overarching costs remain the highest and dominant issues regarding any type of skilled immigration. Now, they had a nice little chart there as well. So of course, the US has come up on number one around immigration, cost of housing and housing shortages. Now, then China, UK, India, Singapore and Australia came in at equal five with Mexico and Vietnam. Mm. And now immigration, housing, medical coverage and returning pets are the ones that the top things in Australia. So they were the thing that I get the immigration because it's very difficult, our immigration system, and it's very costly nowadays. So it's not really helping our fuel shortage when they're charging an arm and a leg in your firstborn. And medical coverage, because obviously anyone coming into our country is got to have private medical.
Yeah, they're not under Medicare, are they?
No, they are not. So they've got to have private medical. That's only for residents and citizens, I'm afraid. And obviously we all know around the pets and the difficulties of being our island nation.
Interesting.
And the quarantine on that. But, yeah, it was an interesting read, that one. But doesn't surprise me. Immigration in the United States is one of the hardest ones.
Well, there you go. Hey, I've got one from Shortlist. Time to fill reduces, but new hire turnover spikes. There's been a big increase in the number of new hires who quit within their probation period, according to new research. One in seven new hires are leaving within the first 6 months of their role, which is double the rate prior to the pandemic, HR software company Elmo has found. The company surveyed 700 HR professionals in Australia and 500 in New Zealand across January and February. Across all job types, staff turnover rates sit at 14% this year, slightly down from last year's 15% and down 3 percentage points from the post-COVID peak. Time to fill in the latest report has averaged 18 days in Australia, slightly down from 20 last year, and 24 days in New Zealand. So interesting that time to fill is reducing, but people seem to be leaving.
Did they say why people are leaving? Did they say why? Is it a money motivator?
Didn't give any reasons to the why. This is just stat-based report.
I reckon it's going
to
be a money motivator.
You think it is?
No, when we're talking to candidates and things like that at the moment, they're getting tapped on the shoulder quite a bit with this short market. Yes, we are seeing a few layoffs still in the market, especially around tech, in the corporate restructure modes. And we're seeing it coming from the big four as well. But I just think, I reckon it's going to be money because we're really short on good skills still. And I know that some companies are still trying to push people down. So that's my gut, is going to be money.
Interestingly, though, when you say about tech, over the last month, it was the first time in 12 months there was an increase in job ads in the tech market. So hopefully we're seeing a bit of a change. It was only a 0.6% increase.
Yeah. We are seeing it move. We're seeing more people out there and more jobs coming through and more and things like that. But we are still seeing a major skills shortage. Yeah. So if people are out there listening thinking, oh, yeah, I'll be able to fill my tech roles really easily, not if you want the good people, and don't think you can beat them down on price either, because the cost of living is biting everyone in the ass.
Well, no. I went to Woolies yesterday.
Oh, you did the groceries.
It's the first time I think I've done it in months. I couldn't believe it. I barely got out of there with my ass intact. It was horrible.
Surprise me.
It's horrible.
You've got a family of four and two boys. Those two boys, I have no doubt, will eat a lot.
Yep, so school holidays
I
now too.
And all I barely get out. Oh, I barely get out under $100, and I'm just Harvey and I.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Fix it, somebody. Fix it
it's
now.
It's mental out there. Yeah, because Craig's got to do the shopping.
That's it.
All right. So government contracts are on the line if gender targets are not met, according to the Fin Review. So BAE Systems, tech giants such as Microsoft and SAP and major consulting firms and law firms are among organisations that stand to lose billions of dollars worth of government contracts if they don't set and meet gender equity targets under legislation Labor plans to pass this year. So wow. Businesses with more than 500 employees would likely have to prove that they are meeting at least three targets set by WGEA if they want to pitch for Commonwealth procurement opportunities over a specified threshold. under the new regime. Interesting.
Interesting and good.
So Mary, the chief executive over at WGEA, Mary Woolridge, said Labor planned to legislate the reforms later this year, warning it was not enough for organisations to merely acknowledge their gender pay gap. They must move from knowing better to doing better.
That's great. So now
bloody good go, Mary. You keep that up.
The good thing is that this data is not just there to be published now. It's going to actually have some clout to it.
It might have clout. It might have an impact on whether they can work with the federal government, ooh, which will usually does have a rain down effect to state.
Yep. Very, very, very interesting indeed.
I agree. I think that it's got teeth.
Got teeth. It's got teeth and it's bearing them now. events. I'm tipping you won't be going to any in the next couple of days while you're sickly.
No. No, not with this head cold. No, I look like crazy lady at the moment. Very pale, hair everywhere. And I sound like crap. I almost sound like Fran Drescher. I'm that nasally.
Don't go there.
Oh, Mr. Sheffield.
I knew you were going to do it. Oh, horrible.
Mr. Sheffield. I know, that'd be terrible. All right, so meetups. Adelaide, Tuesday the 9th of April, we are going to be there. The whole team from Tarpod are turning up.
Yeah, we are.
Forgot the venue. We are. We're going to Adelaide. I've not been to Adelaide for quite a while, so this is going to be good. Now, Brizzy have also got their meetup on the 11th of April, the Thursday. So jump on the meetup sites, register, please, LinkedIn, the meetup.com, and you will find these guys there. Yeah, get along, network. Come and see us in Adelaide, which I'm looking forward to, actually. I haven't met much of the Adelaide crew. There needs to be more.
Get out in droves. Now, we want to have a big night.
Yeah, so I've also got ATC, always got shit going on over there with
Haven't
Joe.
They?
Now, the TA Brew is back in 2024 at the Bodriggy Brew Pub on Tuesday the 28th of May from midday through till close. So get over and register for that. That is a fucking awesome event. I love that event. So I will be there with bells on, and so will Craig.
I will. And in addition to that, the ATC itself is in Melbourne on the 14th and 15th of October at Fed Square in Melbourne again. So
I know. Can't wait. It's one of my favourite conferences.
And early bird tickets are on sale now?
Yes. But
if not, if gone,
there's
but,
more.
What is there?
More early bird tickets are on sale.
For ITERS?
You got it.
Yes. So you can buy your ITERS early bird tickets right now on the website, and nominations are opening next week. We're just putting our finishing touches on the new nomination site.
So
that'll be nice and easy to use, which will be great. So,
oh, my God. Yeah, it's going to be huge. So jump on board, because the Smart Recruiters ITERS tickets are over half sold.
They are. They've only been on sale for a few weeks, so over half sold, and that's saying something. Hey, and while we're up, there's one last one. Rubber Band Bounce 4 is on the 8th of May, and you can jump on Rubber Band's website to register for that. We love the bounce events.
I don't mind a good old bounce event. It's good to have on, actually. It helps everyone out who's not in a major city get to something and get some learnings going on.
Yeah, brilliant.
Always
brilliant.
A very good thing there. Yes, but usually that's pretty much a wrap for me, other than the fact that I might go back to bed and see if I can get on top of this cold.
Yes, you should do that. So it's a goodbye from me, everybody.
Oh, it's a very unwell goodbye from me, everybody.